aharat, gave him to eat and he also ate. Rishe, of the great sage. Vimoksham, release. Vyasanam, from the great danger of being burned by the Sudarshan chakra. Cha, and. Viksha, seeing. Mene, considered. Savirayam, about his own power. Cha, also. Para anubhavam, because of his pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. After 1 year, when Durvasa Muni had returned, King Ambarisha sumptuously fed him all varieties of pure food, and then he himself also ate. When the king saw that the Brahmin Durvasa had been released from the great danger of being burned, he could understand that by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful. But he did not take any credit, for everything had been done by the Lord. Please repeat. After 1 year, when Durvasa Muni had returned, King Ambarisha sumptuously fed him all varieties of pure food, and then he himself also ate. When the king saw that the Brahmin Durvasa had been released from the great danger of being burned, he could understand that by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful. But he did not take any credit, for everything had been done by the Lord. Purport. A devotee, like Maharaj Ambarisha, is certainly always busy in many activities. Of course, this material world is full of dangers that one has to meet, but a devotee, because of his full dependence on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is never disturbed. The vivid example is Maharaj Ambarisha. He was the emperor of the entire world and had many duties to perform, but in the course of these duties, there were many disturbances created by persons like Durvasa Muni. But the king tolerated everything, patiently depending upon the full mercy of the Lord. The Lord, however, is situated in everyone's heart. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sanavishta. And he manages things as he desires. Thus, although Maharaj Ambarisha was faced with many disturbances, the Lord, being merciful to him, managed things so nicely that in the end, Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarisha became great friends and parted cordially on the basis of bhakti yoga. After all, Durvasa Muni was convinced of the power of bhakti yoga, and although he himself was a great mystic yogi. Therefore, as stated by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 6:47, yoginam api sarvesham madgantain antaratmana shredavan bhajate yomam sa me yukta tamo madam. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. Thus it is a fact that a devotee is the topmost yogi, as proved by the dealings of Maharaj Ambarisha with Durvasa Muni. Om Gana Timarandasya Gananjana Chalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurve Nama Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dharati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Setam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vichakam Tamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwe Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vanchakopa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Bacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnava Namo Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in studying this section of the Bhagavatam, we are focusing in on a great devotee, Maharaj Ambarish. Maharaj Ambarish is quoted by Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion is to be one who is expert in performing all nine types of devotional service. He was very powerful. And we can see that not only was he powerful, but he observed very carefully all the proper etiquettes in great humility. All the etiquettes between a kshatriya and a Brahmin and a yogi. Here we can see that Durvasa Muni, although he's being chased by the chakra of Lord Vishnu, for one entire year, still Maharaj Ambarish remained in one spot, not taking any food, waiting for him to return. Such was his dedication to the great principles of etiquette and respect for a Brahmin and a yogi. So this is certainly exemplary. And not a pattern of behavior we see these days. If someone is offended in society, the offender will be very fortunate if he doesn't get retaliation immediately. Someone will strike back at him immediately and take revenge or reaction upon him for the offense, however big or small it might be, justified or unjustified. But Maharaj Ambarish was not of that quality. He was above all these things. And he deeply respected Durvasa Muni. We cannot imagine that after being offended and then chased, seeing him chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, he should possibly feel elated. He should feel possibly proud that, look, I am a great devotee being defended by the Lord. Who can hurt me? And certainly he may even feel justified in taking his meal. But he did not do any of these things. And in fact, when Durvasa Muni finally returned, begging forgiveness at the lotus feet of Maharaj Ambarish, he simply prayed to the Lord to remove the Sudarshan Chakra. And then he fed him very pure food, eating only after Durvasa Muni was satisfied. Such are the great exemplary qualities of a devotee of this caliber. So these examples are here for us to study and see what it means to be a Vaishnava. What it means to react and live in this material world, as Srila Prabhupada indicates here, that as a devotee of the Lord, he was certainly always busy in many activities. And some of these activities resulted in the enmity, the friction with other personalities, especially very powerful ones like Durvasa Muni. Ambarish Maharaj, we can certainly understand that he was acting like Maharaj Yudhisthira. Maharaj Yudhisthira is said to have no enemies in the world. No enemies. He treated everyone humbly with respect. So Maharaj Ambarish was of that category. And he respected Durvasa Muni even after the Sudarshan Chakra was released, and he took care of him very, very nicely. So nicely that they developed a friendship. A friendship which can only happen when one is treated in a very respectful way, in a very proper way. If we don't treat each other with proper etiquette and respect, then how can there be friendship? There must be an etiquette followed, respect, in order for friendship to bloom. So Maharaj Ambarish, he was, by his nature as a devotee, able to exhibit all these qualities very naturally. We know in the beginning, when Durvasa Muni had gone to take his bath, he consulted with all his advisors that what was the proper thing to do to break his fast. So he was not above taking advice from others to chart out the correct and what he hoped would be a fenceless path of action. Such is the nature of a leader. I was reading yesterday something I thought I would share with you, and this was a statement by Lord Ramachandra to his brother. I believe it's Bharat Maharaj. He said like this, "O wise prince," he's advising him how to perform his duties as a king, "I hope you avoid the 14 things that pollute a king, namely atheism, untruthfulness, anger, negligence, procrastination, avoidance of the learned, enthralldom with the senses, execution of state affairs without consultation, following the advice of fools, failure to launch plans, failure to keep secrets, failure to recite prayers for auspiciousness when necessary, and failure to stand up to receive everyone who visits." So these are standards of a king that Lord Ramachandra was impressing upon his brother. Not only a king, but we can understand that many of these would apply to us as devotees. Certainly, we may not have the power of a great king, and we may not have quite so many advisors. But still, we have to control the senses, we have to avoid anger, untruthfulness. When someone approaches us in confidence, we must be able to keep that confidence. And we must avoid taking advice of foolish persons, persons with no proper knowledge. And certainly we must, in humility, respect everyone that we come in contact with. Not just those who are superiors, but everyone. Naturally, the king, because of his position, should be respected by everyone. But it was his duty to return the respect. So, these are noteworthy qualities that we should try to observe, because these personalities are put in the Srimad Bhagavatam not by accident, but to direct us on the standards of behavior of a devotee, and how, in this case, he depended completely on the mercy of the Lord. As is stated in this verse, that he realized at the end of this whole 1 year sojourn that he himself was very powerful, even more powerful than the great mystic yogi Durvasa Muni. He realized that he was actually very powerful, more powerful than a great mystic yogi. But he didn't want to take any credit for it. Why? Certainly if one is powerful, it's one of his own achievements and qualities. And nowadays in society, we see if someone has some talent or ability, he advertises himself for profit, and to get followers, to get wealth, to get influence. If he becomes very good in some kind of athletic ability, then he seeks to make millions of dollars. He makes a big name for himself in society. Or if he is a great political leader, he seeks to gather a great following and preserve that name. Or whether he's very talented in acting or beautiful or handsome, whatever, he seeks to take advantage of all these things to increase his wealth, his name, his fame, his power. But here, Ambarish Maharaj is showing us that he recognized that all these things are coming from the Lord. They were not his possessions, but rather as a via media, a pure medium for the Lord. The Lord was exhibiting these powers through him. Just as Arjuna was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he did not want to fight with all these incredible warriors like Bhishma, Karna, and Duryodhana, and so many others. Bhishma is so powerful that he could, with his arrows, stop the flow of the Ganges River. Karna, practically one of the few people that was able to fight one-on-one with Arjuna. He himself, practically one of the greatest warriors on the face of the earth at that time. Yet Arjuna was able to defeat all these persons. Why? Because he surrendered to Krishna. He saw his own power as not sufficient. But when Krishna said, "You do because I've asked you," he surrendered. And incredible power was exhibited by him, so much so that they were able to defeat so many Akshohini's worth of soldiers and establish the Pandavas as the rulers of the earth. Because Krishna wanted to act through him, all these wonderful things were accomplished by Arjuna as he was pure-hearted and willing to surrender to Krishna. So Maharaj Ambarish was in that same line, that same quality. His surrender to the Supreme Lord was completely manifested so strongly that Durvasa Muni himself admitted the superiority of Bhakti Yoga. You could see that this Bhakti Yogi, Maharaj Ambarish, was more powerful than he himself. When initially, superficially, he thought him to be just another king, which this yogi could easily defeat. One hair on his head, he could create a terrible demon and destroy the king and all his kingdom. But no, the power of his devotional service was so great that Durvasa Muni was in fear for his very life. So, as Prabhupada indicates here, the Lord had a plan, just as with the Lord had a plan at Kurukshetra to establish the Pandavas. He had a plan to demonstrate for all time the power of Bhakti Yoga, the power over any kind of material accomplishments, including yoga, yogic powers, which are extremely powerful in this universe. A yogi can be so powerful that he can create a universe. He can create an entire universe. And he can do many, many incredible, miraculous things. Nowadays, people are impressed by some small exhibition, or as Prabhupada would say, a puny exhibition of material strength. But the yogis, their power was so great that they could control everyone in the entire universe. And still, Ambarish Maharaj, by his devotional service, was much greater. So, these are a few of the ideas here that we can try and contemplate and meditate upon as we study this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. As for the character of a pure devotee, I was researching last night, because we've heard so much about Srila Prabhupada, and some of us had some personal experience of his great quality. But when he first came to America, nobody knew him, nor did he have any disciples who were willing to help him. Yet when he came to Butler, Pennsylvania, he was described by Sally Agarwal in this way. She invited every night a group of her friends to come for an hour and a half, 2 hours to meet with Prabhupada. And she described it like this. It says, "It was quite an intellectual group that we were in, and they were fascinated by him. They hardly knew what to ask him. They didn't know enough. This was like a dream out of a book. Who would expect to meet a Swami in someone's living room in Butler, Pennsylvania? It was really tremendous." And then later she described here that the people there all liked him. He was a brilliant man. They were amazed by how intelligent he was. And the thing that got them was the way he remembered their name and his humorous way. He looked so serious all the time, but he was a very humorous person. He was forbidding in his looks, but he was also very charming. He was the easiest guest I've ever had in my life. When I couldn't spend time with him, he chanted. I knew he was perfectly happy. When I couldn't talk to him, he chanted. He was so easy because I knew he was never bored. He never felt any pressure or tension in having him. And when the people would come and they were always smoking cigarettes, he would say, "Pay no attention, think nothing of it." And that's what he said, "Think nothing of it." Because he knew we were different. I didn't smoke in front of him, but I knew I wasn't supposed to smoke in front of Gopal's father. So I sort of considered him the same and didn't make any problems for him. One evening, a guest asked Prabhupada, "What do you think of Jesus Christ?" And Prabhupada replied, "He is the Son of God." And he added that he, the guest, was also a son of God. Everyone was interested to hear that Swami accepted Jesus Christ as the Son of God. And at other times, they were cooking meat, and they had meat in their house. And Prabhupada told them, "Don't worry, it's not bothering me in the least. Please go ahead about your business." She said, "Oh, Swamiji, we have just cooked meat and the smell will be very disagreeable to you." But he said, "Oh, think nothing of it. Think nothing of it." So this was the nature of Srila Prabhupada. Very tolerant. We can see not only in the very beginning, but over the course of his preaching mission, he tolerated so many unqualified individuals, many of whom were unfamiliar with the Vedic etiquette, the Vedic standards. They used to come to the program at the temple, and Prabhupada would cook everything. He would serve it, and then he would clean up himself. And one day, one of the persons visiting stayed a little late and saw how Prabhupada was cleaning everything up and asked if he could help. And Prabhupada said, I thought you would never ask. So tolerant he was, and yet he entrusted great responsibility and empowered those disciples who were previously hippies to spread his mission of Krishna consciousness all around the entire world. With so much power he gave them by the grace of the Supreme Lord that in a very short time it spread around the entire world. A feat which is actually completely amazing and astounding. Not one that is duplicated in this modern age. And at the same time, Prabhupada claimed nothing for himself. He claimed nothing. And when, at one point, some of his followers mistakenly tried to promote that Swamiji, Prabhupada, was God, he immediately threw them out of the society. He would not take any such nonsense to be spoken about him. Not like ordinary Swamis and Yogis, who from the beginning promote themselves to be great personalities or God themselves. But he would not tolerate all these kind of statements. His society was for purely surrendering to the Supreme Lord. And he remained humble. A humble servant of the Lord, preaching. Preaching everywhere. He sacrificed everything for the service of the Lord. So we are very fortunate, because this Krishna consciousness movement could not have been spread without Srila Prabhupada. Not only his preaching, but his personal example. So we came to know, not just from reading, but from seeing, what a great devotee, a pure devotee of the Lord. An empowered devotee of the Lord, what he acted like, how he demonstrated all these qualities. And naturally, all kinds of people became attracted to him. Attracted not just to be with him, but to take up his mission and to become his servants, become his disciples, and spread this Krishna consciousness all around the world. They would go to places like London with practically no money, just depending on the orders of Srila Prabhupada, and eventually become successful. They would go to a distant city and open a new temple, or travel with him in countries they had never been before, on his order, preaching. So this is the power of a pure devotee, and this is the great benefit of associating with him. By associating with Maharaj Ambarish in a proper way, Durvasa Muni himself became appreciated of devotees. So these are some of the lessons that I was able to understand from this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And why Krishna says, of all yogis, he who abides in me with great faith, worship me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united me in yoga, and is the highest of all. So such pure devotees as Maharaj Ambarish and Srila Prabhupada are most intimately united with Krishna, and they are the highest of all yogis. So let me stop here and invite anyone who has some question, comment, you'd like to add something, please take an opportunity now. I was going to ask if anybody had any knowledge or remembrances about Srila Prabhupada and his qualities they would like to share now to help us improve our and increase our appreciation. Yes, Ramanya?
It's a very good lecture. Thank you very much. Because of Kalaji today, I was just thinking In one point, I think in the beginning, the Prabhupada was preaching. I mean, he always was preaching to his disciples and the society and people in general. But I think there were evening program. They were saying Sunday, Prabhupada's memories. Last Sunday, one in Europe, Sunday was made simply wonderful. And one devotee told him, Prabhupada, this has grains. He said, don't worry about it. It's for preaching purpose. No, don't worry about it. Don't be too fanatical. So, I mean, he is expert, Prabhupada, in everything he was doing, you know, from beginning to end. And he teaches a lot of things, the whole Vedic culture. And at the same time, he was very merciful, tolerant, and very strict at the same time to his disciples. And we know that. I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you very much, Ramana. Anyone else would like to say something? Any of my God brothers, especially? Bob Rupa? God sisters, you know? All included.
Mrs. Mrs. Agarwal's mentioning Srila Prabhupada's softness in his humor reminded me of something. When he came to Honolulu in August of 1970, we built a Vyasa song for him over the previous few days, and we finished it about 8 or 10 minutes before he arrived at the temple, which is always kind of how we measured whether things were actually spiritual or not. If they were impossible and somehow or other they came together at the last minute, we figured that Krishna had taken charge and made it happen. So we just finished this Vyasa song, and it was situated in a bay window at the other end of the temple room from the altar. And so it was sitting up on the ledge in the bay window, but we didn't have an umbrella built over the Vyasa song yet. But we had rigged up one of those, like we used to back then, take an umbrella and cover it with velvet and gold lame and strings of fake pearls and jewels hanging down and stuff. So we used that to kind of walk him through the airport earlier in the day. So one of the boys climbed up onto the shelf, the bay window shelf, and held this umbrella over Srila Prabhupada's head while he was speaking. Prabhupada spoke for a few minutes, and he looked up at the umbrella, and then he looked at the brahmachari, and he just kind of shrugged, and he said, I don't think it will rain in here.
In Hawaii, Prabhupada said, it is not possible to be happy in this material world, but maybe in Hawaii.
Anyone else? Any of the ladies would like to say something?
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Actually, I've been meditating, you know, in the past couple of weeks about the greatness of Srila Prabhupada, you know, and as you know, just got back to the community again, and I've been thinking that, you know, since we have so many Srila Prabhupada disciples in the community, you know, I want to start something in my home, which is going to be called a Srila Prabhupada Night. And eventually, you know, I will ask more Mukhya to announce it, but, you know, I'm going to invite different, each night, it's going to be each Friday, I'm going to invite whoever disciple of Srila Prabhupada wants, you know, to come and share, you know, his experience, and we can remember Srila Prabhupada and, you know, chant Hare Krishna together, because I think that we really need in our community, you know, to really, you know, focus in the greatness of Srila Prabhupada. So I just want to say that in the microphone, you know, because I'm gonna go and start asking Prabhupada disciples if they'd like to come to my home and give us to the grand disciples some mercy, because we have so many Prabhupada disciples, and like right now, this pastime of Hawaii and this pastime of what Srila Prabhupada says, you know, we don't know things like that. You know, we really don't know many things about Srila Prabhupada. So I take this opportunity in the microphone to let you know, Prabhupada disciples, that one day I'm gonna get you and invite you to my home. So please be merciful to us and come and, you know, give us some nectar. This is Premananda Gaur.
And you're going to feed them high-quality mangoes also? Any ladies would like to say anything? Mother Lakshmi, Akuti, Madhaji, anything? Any remembrances? All right, we can stop here, unless I miss somebody. Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.